Welcome to the Lemelson Center's podcast series on invention and innovation. I'm Laurel Fritch, and on this episode, Joyce Beattie, senior historian at the Lemelson Center, interviews Nikola Tesla biographer W. Bernard Carlson about his book, Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age.
I'm talking with Dr. W. Bernard Carlson, chair and professor in the Department of Engineering and Society at the University of Virginia, with a joint appointment in the History Department. He's also a former Lemelson Center Fellow. He's the author of Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. To get started, tell us about Tesla's life before he became famous. What in his upbringing and background prepared him for a career as an electrical inventor?
Tesla has a very interesting family background. He was born in what is now modern-day Croatia, and at that time it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but his family was from Serbia, and his father was a priest in the Serbian Orthodox Church. And so he grew up in an environment where he was exposed to all sorts of ideas through his father and through the church. And it was there that he began to start thinking about, as a young guy, all sorts of things about the natural world. And one of my favorite stories is when he was about 5 years old, he had a cat named Masek. And Masek the cat came in one winter night when it was very dry, and he was completely covered with basically an electrical charge, so he was glowing. And Tesla, when he was 5 years old, turned to his father, who again was a priest, and said, "Why is the cat glowing?" And his father said, "Well, he has electricity, and electricity is like the lightning in the sky." And he explained all about lightning to his young son. And Tesla, without missing a beat, said, "So, if I rub the cat and that produces a shock, who rubs the earth and produces the lightning?" And that illustrates the sort of precocious nature of Tesla's life. But I think the interesting thing about his background was, as Serbs living in Croatia in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, he and his family were strangers in a strange land. In other words, they had spent a lot of time trying to sort out how they got along with their neighbors who may not have been Serbian, and they also had to deal with the Austrian authorities. This particular region, known as the Krajina, was a military frontier, and indeed, one of the things that affected Tesla's life was every 10th member of a family had to be in the army. And so, in fact, after he went through essentially the equivalent of high school, he was about to be drafted into the army, and he said to his father, "I really don't want to do this." And his father and his uncles put their heads together, and they said, "Well, then you need to disappear into the mountains for 9 or 12 months. And so Tesla disappeared into the mountains for 9 or 12 months. And when he came back, they had arranged for him to have a military scholarship that would allow him to go to one of the few engineering schools in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It was a school known as the Johannam Polytechnic, which was in Graz. And it was there that he first was exposed to electrical machinery.
So let's talk about two of his best-known inventions. And first, I would like you to explain simply what a Tesla coil is, what it does, and why it's important.
Okay. A Tesla coil is essentially a high-frequency, high-voltage transformer. And what it does is it takes ordinary current, say the electricity that's coming out of your wall at 110 volts, and depending on how the coil is designed, it can step up the voltage to 10 or 20,000 volts, and in so doing, the amount of current goes down. So you'll have a higher voltage, which is like the electrical pressure, but the volume of electrons, the amount of current going through the system, will be less. It's a desirable device not only to do all sorts of special effects like you see in Frankenstein movies, and Tesla was one of the first to do some of those experiments to demonstrate what is seen in almost all Frankenstein movies, where you have the two poles or rods that go up sort of in a V shape, and the spark runs up between the two poles, which is known at least in the electrical trickery trade as a Jacob's ladder. And so you can use a Tesla coil to do that. In a more practical sense, the Tesla coil is at the heart of producing the high voltages that were needed back in the day for vacuum tube radios and for televisions, both of which often relied on stepping up the voltage to a fairly high level in the case of radio in order to be able to transmit messages at certain frequencies.
Another one of his very important inventions is the alternating current motor. How did that change the electrical industry?
Tesla's first big invention that was a success was the alternating current motor, and he developed that from the time that he was in engineering school in Austria at Graz. He started thinking about the possibility of a new kind of motor, and indeed he starts thinking probably more about motors because he comes out of the Austrian Empire, where there was a lot of interest in not just using electricity for lighting but using it for power. And his motor has the important impact, which he perfects in New York in 1887. It has an important impact, as I like to say, in that it shifts the electrical industry from being solely electric lighting, which was built largely around Edison's incandescent lamp and direct current, to being the fact that for the first time you could have electric light and power systems. If you don't have a motor, you can't have a power system. And Tesla's motor was used in a variety of applications right from the beginning, ranging from elevators to powering machine tools. It was essential for mass production because all of those moving belts that you see on assembly lines are driven by motors. And indeed, you have a Tesla-like motor in your refrigerator and in all sorts of appliances in your home.
Let's take a step back from Tesla himself and talk a little bit about the challenges you faced doing the research for this book. I'm assuming you don't speak either Croatian, Serbian, Hungarian, or many Eastern European languages.
There were some real challenges. Now, on the language front, the challenges were surprisingly easy because Tesla emigrates to America in 1884, and he stays here until he dies in 1943. So all of his business records, all of his creative inventions, all of that stuff is in English. So in fact, the Serbs that want to do research on Tesla, most of them know English, but English is about the third language that they learn. So I had a real advantage in working with the materials from a language standpoint. The challenge was that I've made two trips to Serbia, to Belgrade, where the papers are kept in the Tesla Museum, and they were very proud to show me the papers. But I never was able to work out an arrangement with them and to satisfy the Serbian government's Ministry of Culture that I could use the records extensively. I came to a point where I said, the materials that I'm finding in the U.S. and in sources like newspapers and in patent records were sufficient that I could write the book and develop it the way that I was able to develop it. But there are 150,000 pages of material that other scholars are going to get to use as time goes on, I hope, to investigate other aspects of Tesla's life.
Since you mentioned Edison, let's deal with, shall we say, the elephant in the room. We often see Edison called the Wizard of Menlo Park, but you start the book by referring to Tesla as the Wizard with a capital W. So can you talk a little bit about this War of the Wizards?
Okay, so this is one of the few opportunities I will ever get to talk about electrical wizards, okay? So in the 19th century, there were any number of folks that traveled with carnivals or traveled on their own doing electrical shows. And in fact, the Smithsonian has a collection, I believe it's in the Dibner Library collections, of all of the equipment that went with one of these 19th century traveling shows. Now, people that did those shows were known as wizards. And we tend to see the wizard as being the benevolent genius. But wizard also was a two-edged sword, and it was used throughout the 19th century with people that were well aware that it also was the charlatan and the trickster. In other words, it went back to those carnival roots. And so as a result, I start the book out by telling a story of a newspaper reporter named Arthur Brisbane, who went on to become a famous editor of tabloids in New York City. And he quite naturally, drawing on that rich heritage of people that dealt with electricity being wizards, referred to Tesla as a wizard. And so he's simply using popular jargon the way that his readers would have understood at that time. And Edison, in the late 1870s, is a result of a bringing out not the electric light, but the phonograph just before that, becomes known as the Wizard of Menlo Park.
I would like to tell you a story.
Please.
If that's okay. This is my favorite Tesla story. Several years ago, My husband and I were in Talkeetna, Alaska, which is this little town between Anchorage and Fairbanks by Denali National Park. We're in this small general store in January, waiting to in line to pay for our purchases, and this man is standing in front of us who looks like this is the first time he's come in from the bush in many, many months. He's wearing a coat made out of a deceased animal. He has a beard down to his waist, crazy hair coming out of the deceased animal hat that he's wearing. And he turns around to us and looks at us and says, I'm reading this really great book about this fella named Tesla. You ever heard of him? Boy, Edison stole everything from him. Did Edison steal everything from Tesla?
No. I hate to say that there's something lost in the translation as source materials make their way to the outskirts of Denali National Park in Alaska. However, people desperately want to believe that there is this incredible rivalry between Edison and Tesla, and that in particular, Tesla represents this sort of highly creative, artistic type who invents for the good of humanity. And they want to see him in these highly romantic terms. There have been a lot of different ways that Tesla has been treated in the popular literature, and frequently he is seen as being a technological virtuoso second only to Leonardo da Vinci. And people are absolutely besotted with his accomplishments, and at the same time, in the very next breath, they'll say, but he was a wacko! In order to kind of put Tesla onto that pole of a spectrum, they proceed to place Edison on the opposite end, which is to say he's crass, he's selfish, he's a profit-hungry robber baron, and on top of that, he's a jerk. And of course, to really underline that, they sort of say, well, you know, everyone knows, and I suspect that your newfound friend who could provide you with anything you want in the way of furs probably told you the story that Tesla was working for the Edison Company, the Edison Machine Works, when he arrived in New York City in 1884. And Tesla always told the story that he was promised a premium, a reward of $50,000 if he developed this new electrical system. And he develops the new electrical system, and he walks in and he says, so, where's my $50,000? And the Edison manager goes, well, you don't understand our American sense of humor. We were just kidding. We were just goofing on you. And that is always cited as the example that Edison stole from Tesla. Now, Tesla walks out the door probably a few weeks after that from the Edison Machine Works. There is in the archives in Belgrade, Tesla's notebook from when he worked at the Edison Machine Works. And one of my favorite pages in all of the Tesla materials is the last page, just like a schoolboy. It says on the final page of the notebook, it says, goodbye, Edison! In this dramatic flourish of handwriting. Now, when he says goodbye to Edison, he walks out in his mind and probably in his pocket with the designs for an arc lighting system, which is what he had been working on for the Edison Company. The Edison Company, at a moment in the mid-1880s, remember, it was its major claim to fame is it was doing incandescent lighting, light bulbs. But it began to think, we're losing market share because the light bulbs are great for inside people's houses, but what about street lighting, and what about lighting for stadiums or warehouses or railroad yards or a whole number of big lighting applications? And they needed this type of arc lighting system to go after that market. So Tesla quits the Edison Company, and lo and behold, a few months later, down the road from New York, where Edison Machine Shops was, down the road in Rahway, New Jersey, he finds another set of backers. And guess what they produce? A patented arc lighting system. So, who stole from whom? And so, all the way through working on this project, I had to sort of say, let's do a good job, pay attention to understanding how Tesla's inventions worked, how he came to develop them, what was his method, what was his style, but at the same time, also thinking about his personality and not letting him kind of revert into any number of kind of two-dimensional comic book character sort of things. And so anything that I put in the book about Tesla's personality or behaviors, I found either in a letter or I found it in a newspaper article.
Okay, so since we're myth-busting, what about this death ray I keep hearing about?
Tesla really never wanted what he claimed in the 1930s, the invention that we're talking about, to be seen as rays, because he had a whole set of issues about how electromagnetic radiation, what we call radio waves, actually propagated. Okay? And so he basically said, I think that electromagnetic radiation works in some very particular ways, and this invention is not about radiation. Okay. So in the mid-1930s, as people begin to realize the unsettled circumstances throughout the world might lead to another world war, one of the things that's in the front pages of the newspapers is the possibility of building bombers that could basically fly across the Atlantic or fly across the English Channel, fly hundreds of miles, and annihilate cities. And I think Tesla begins to think about this, as does the Air Ministry in England, and they begin to say, you know, what are we going to do about this? And in the mid-1930s, Tesla gives an interview where the newspaper reporters come in and Tesla tells them what he's been working on and the next big thing. And so he announces and he says, don't worry about the bombers. I got it all worked out. We're going to have a particle beam weapon that is going to shoot down the planes before they get anywhere near New York City or the East Coast of the United States. And for many years, nobody knew for sure whether Tesla had actually invented this weapon that he talked about in these multiple interviews, or whether he was just blowing smoke. In the 1980s, circulating among the Tesla aficionados was a paper that was later certified as being a genuine Tesla paper, that there was an original in the Tesla Museum back in then Yugoslavia, and it describes a particle beam weapon. So, you take your Tesla coil energizes particles, in this case, little teeny tiny, smaller than a BB, mercury balls, and accelerates them to a fairly high voltage. And then you have them essentially in a dome, much like he had on his Tesla tower, but also like you would have on a Van de Graaff generator. And you then have some way of basically lining up the particles that are bouncing around inside this sphere on the top of your tower. And they basically come out in a nice neat row, and they are directed at the incoming aircraft. Now, there are some technical problems with making all of this work, not the least of which is it takes a tremendous amount of energy to accelerate particles, protons or electrons, which is what we do in massive linear accelerators that are used, or what in the 1930s were called atom smashers. So Tesla's absolutely right. You can take particles and you can accelerate them to very high speeds and deliver a lot of energy. But he's not doing it with subatomic particles. He's doing it with macroscopic little balls of mercury. So the amount of energy that this thing would take would be enormous. The second part of the problem was to actually keep the beam on focus. In other words, the beam tends to dissipate. If you're actually going to have the energy do something like shoot down an airplane, then you have to keep the beam focused. And it is very hard to keep the beam focused over long distances. And Tesla clearly provides no insight as to how he's going to manage the beam. So it was a great idea. And there are some scientists that have reflected and said, you know, when we got started in the Reagan years on the Star Wars Defense Initiative, Strategic Defense Initiative, they were inspired by Tesla. But they were only inspired by Tesla. Now, this is going to break the hearts of many listeners, but there was no particle beam weapon, and it was an interesting idea, but it is not hidden away in some secret base in Paraguay or in the Rocky Mountains or anywhere else. Sorry.
Bernie, it's been a real pleasure. But wait, there's more. Be sure to tune in to part two of my conversation with Professor Carlson on Tesla, inventor of the electrical age.
Well, that concludes this podcast. If you have any questions about it, you can get in touch with us by email at lemsen@si.edu. on Facebook at facebook.com/Lemelson Center, and on Twitter. Please join us for our next podcast. And in the meantime, keep up with us on our website, where you'll find blogs, video podcasts, and more. Thanks for listening.